Hello. Today I'll be talking to you about how to organize your digital life in a privacy-preserving, machine-agnostic, and practical manner. And for myself, I am Zazdin Basarabov. I am a student at University College London. And mostly I'm a computer science researcher, so I do most work around blockchain, cybersecurity, and a little bit around machine learning. But I'm also kind of nerd about privacy and open source technologies, standards, and freedom essentially. And so, which is why what I'll be talking to you about right now is something I've been researching as a side hobby for the past few years, and I'd really love to share what I've learned, and hopefully you can take some experience out of this as well. So, I'll be focusing on privacy today, but privacy is a niche subject. It's simply the minority of people care about it, and as such, when you focus on privacy, you definitely lose out some convenience and some compatibility compared to people who don't care about privacy. So the solutions which I'll be showing you today will certainly make some compromises around that, and you really have to care enough about it, and you have to evaluate your risk, cost to return ratio to see if to see if it actually it is worth for you. And for example, you should be expecting some problems left and right. So for example, backup your password manager's database file in case something goes wrong. So let's say the thing that I would like to focus particularly is not just about privacy, but about generally good organization of digital life. So that means I would like to organize every digital information that is of value to me, such that it is completely independent of the operating system I'm running, of the particular software, or of the particular front-end applications that I'm using, or of the particular hardware that I'm using it for. That means that everything should be completely compatible with everything else, and if I lose out any single device of mine, I don't lose out any information, and I can simply access the same information that is of value to me from any device I want to. And it should also be private. So the key properties that I'll be looking for are support for end-to-end encryption, support for cloud synchronization, and mostly cloud-first storage. That means that everything should be stored somewhere else, maybe not in a public cloud, but still somewhere else, not on the particular local machine. And it should be easily accessible and synchronized, but possibly cached. And of course, it should also be standard compliant, such that it's not dependent on the existence of any piece of software. And so, this talk I'll be presenting you various open source technologies which are adhering to these properties. Now, you likely know many of these, but the key value that I'm trying to bring here is the experience that I've spent essentially trying out many different technologies and seeing whether their details and the compromises that they're making are actually acceptable for the properties which I'm trying to assert here, which, like I said, it should be completely independent of any hardware, software, OS, and things like that. So hopefully you still get to learn something new for this. Another point is that while I will be focusing on privacy, I really want to put a great emphasis on practicality. So that means I shouldn't be making too much of a compromise in terms of convenience and in terms of interoperability to get some more privacy. So they will be more private alternatives to the software which I'll be discussing today. And that's fine. If you want to use it, just use it. But I think more people would be comfortable with a balance between practicality and privacy. So the main talk points today are about, so I'll be going over email, calendar, context, tasks, office, password management, and lastly, and the biggest topic that I'll be touching on, and the most interesting one for me essentially, is personal file storage. So how do you actually get all of your digital information that's of value to you, that's not email, calendar, and office files, of course, that can be easily organized, accessible, and has a scalable structure that can take that is extensive enough such that if you ever want to store any new piece of information in the future, you still have a right place to store it. Like you don't need to change your folder structure or things like that. But first, let's start simple and with emails. So with emails, of course, the most widely accepted standard is to use IMAP. So as long as you have an email host that supports IMAP, and you can use pretty much many different types of front-end applications that use IMAP, and that's good. And on the privacy front, I would simply recommend using the widespread OpenPGP key. So if you aren't aware, OpenPGP keys are public-private key pairs, such that if you want to send an email to somebody else, you encrypt your email with your public key and they are able to decrypt it with their private key. So you get completely encrypted end-to-end communication. The sad point is that most people, of course, don't use that. So you'll likely not be encrypting most of your emails that you're sending, but it's still essentially the option that we have right now. And as for email host, I would personally recommend mailbox.org. Now, they aren't quite famous, but I've tried out many different email hosts in terms of features, sets, cost, and compatibility with, of course, the requirements which I mentioned earlier on. And this one seems to be the most extensive. So they're completely standard compliant, meaning they don't skew the IMAP standards, just like, for example, unlike, for example, what Gmail is doing. They have an OK spam filter. They support custom domains, and they support also C filters, which is pretty interesting. They also have their own PGP key server. And I think most importantly, they also automatically encrypt, if you want to, they automatically encrypt every incoming email with your public PGP key. So, I mean, you still have to, they still have access to your emails because obviously they're coming in unencrypted if somebody is not using their PGP key, but they're encrypting it as soon as they get it and as soon as they pass it through the spam filter. So, they're not really holding any copies of the decrypted messages, at least, of course, officially. They're also based in Germany, so it's pretty nice as well. As for clients, I'm pretty sure the widespread Thunderbird just simply gets the job done. Just pretty extensive, has lots of features, works well. So that's pretty easy. Whereas for Android, I think Fair Email is an open source project that's really interesting, and it's also very feature-full. Now, it can support syncing many different accounts at the same time, and my favorite feature that I haven't seen in many other places, including Thunderbird, is that it is able to automatically filter out tracking images such that it loads all the other images which should be normal, and it simply hides the tracking images. So that's a pretty good convenience feature. But of course, if you want to go more extreme, you can not load any images to begin with. As for when you want to encrypt or decrypt keys through Android, you simply have to have a keychain app that stores your private key and uses it for these operations. So Open Keychain is pretty much the default way to go on Android, and it works well. And you can also use it with a private key stored in YubiKey. So if you have one of those, you can decrypt or encrypt your emails through it. But of course, you have to have your YubiKey constantly in your computer or on your phone every time you want to encrypt or decrypt an email. So it might be too inconvenient for you, but this is an option. Cool. I would also like to mention ProtonMail as a pretty good, more privacy-focused alternative. Now, the problem with ProtonMail is that they're too privacy-focused, and for some people, this comes with more inconvenience costs, but if you want to go for it, just go for it. Cool, so coming into the more interesting part, so calendar, contacts, and tasks, they're pretty well-known standards for these, CalDAV, CARDAV. Problem is that usually these servers are not written to support any kind of encryption. So obviously, if you're not self-hosting your own calendar or context or task server, then it's not really any it's not really good for privacy. So EtiSync is an adapter that essentially is a server and a client that essentially allows you to synchronize your context tasks and calendars across any of your devices in an end-to-end encrypted manner. So they use their own protocol for communication between the server and the client. It's not regular CalDAV, CARDAV, of course. And it's pretty encrypted, and it also supports version control. So it doesn't simply update the current state, but it also says, you know, you added this contract, then you edited it, and so on and so forth. So if something messes up, you can always go back, which is pretty interesting. I would like to also say the developer is pretty proactive. So he has always responded very quickly to my issues and helped solve them. So He's currently, I mean, everything's completely open source. You can self-host it if you want to, but he's also selling, right? He's also selling hosting, so I would encourage you to support him on that one. One minus that I can find here is because it is so convenient to use, meaning, for example, Etsy, when you set it up on your Android, it simply is a native Android context calendars and task provider. So given that pretty much every Android app asks for access to your context or calendars, you may not think that it's secure enough or private enough for you to store any valuable information in these containers. In which case, you might want to use a more private alternative like ProtonMail's own calendars or contacts. But other than that, it works on Linux, it works on iOS as well. On Linux, it locally hosts a CalDAV and a CardDAV server. So you can pretty much use it with any front end you want, and yeah, it works pretty well. As for very particular front ends, I really like the simple line of open source applications on Android. So Simple Contacts, for example, is a pretty good front end that just gets the job done for context. Simple Calendar, same for calendar. It's pretty okay. Whereas for Linux, Thunderbird Lightning is pretty much the default option, I think, that pretty much most of you guys are using, I think, for controlling your calendar and accepting invitations through email and managing them left and right, of course. For contacts, Thunderbird also has an add-on called Cardbook, which can synchronize via CardDAV to the local Etisync client, for example, and it also works okay. And when we get to tasks, it becomes a little bit more complicated. So for desktop, we still have good applications for that are standard compliant and work with tasks. So for example, my favorite one is KOrganizer. It simply supports I think, the complete or pretty much everything around the task standard, and it simply gets the job done. The problem with tasks is when you get to the Android side. I actually could not find any single application that supports the full task standard. So the more widespread application, I think, is OpenTasks, and it supports most of the standards. So that means that you can still synchronize, for example, with Etisync, and it works well. But it does not support categories, it doesn't support subtasks, and the UI is not very configurable. So it gets a pretty basic job done, but if you want to actually take advantage of the features that allow you to organize more tasks in the standard, that simply doesn't get that job done. Also, development is not particularly active as well. I mean, it is going on, but it's not very active. So another alternative which I prefer is task.org. Now, Task is a lot more active and a lot more featureful than OpenTasks, but unfortunately, it also doesn't support the full standard. What I mean by that is there's this one tiny feature that's missing, which is that tasks usually have a start date and an end date. Start date knows the date where you should be able to start the task. And usually in OpenTasks, for example, if you set a start date in the future, it's going to hide the task so that you don't see it because obviously you can't act on it. So why would you want to see it or clutter your menu if you have too many tasks? So that one doesn't get synchronized with the standard right now, so that's a bit of a bummer. So if you want, you can help the developer by contributing to this particular issue. But otherwise, the UI is pretty great, and yeah, pretty sure this is soon going to become like the default go-to choice for any kind of task manager on Android. So what about Google Docs? Well, for me, Google Docs is very convenient. I mean, modular approach, of course, the privacy concerns. It's really good to collaborate with people in real time. And a nice alternative to that is Mailbox Office. Now, they do support end-to-end encryption, so they have cloud storage and real-time cloud synchronization on Office files, and they have a web-based front end that you can edit them, and it is end-to-end encrypted, but not when you collaborate with other people. So that's kind of a bummer. So I was thinking that maybe an interesting idea to extend the field is to maybe develop a new open source project that essentially allows you to collaborate real time on Office documents using an end-to-end encrypted manner. But so far, the most secure way to handle your documents is to simply edit them yourself. for password management, the classic KeePass is pretty much the most famous one. KeePass is usually written is in traditionally written for Windows, so our re-implementation for Linux is a KeePass XC. So KeePass introduces an open source database format that is essentially data structure that can hold passwords. So KeePass XC completely supports this, and it also supports many other different convenience features. For example, it supports two-factor authentication with YubiKeys, which is another bonus for security, of course. It's not that secure in a sense that you have a decryption password, and the way the two-factor authentication works is that you also have an additional private key stored on your physical YubiKey. And so you take KeePass takes your input unlock password, passes it through the YubiKey, which gets encrypted, and then it unlocks with the returned password from the YubiKey, which obviously doesn't change at any time. So as long as somebody manages to snoop that, it's over. But it's also a bit of it's also kind of convenient. So I guess make your choice here as well. And right now there's a small bug about data loss in some edge cases that I found, but should be fixed quite soon. As for Android, the recommended application for that is KeePass to Android. It completely supports the KeePass file format. It supports YubiKey encryption, decryption, and it also handles database conflicts quite well. So, for example, if you're sharing your database file on a cloud storage, and you access it from your, of course, computer or phone, if you change it on your computer and it's still loaded on your phone, then KeePass will say, database file has changed, do you want to reload it? And if you've already made local changes on the Android, it's not going to simply remove them, it's going to merge both of the changes together. So that's pretty good. And in order to be able to use YubiKeys with KeePass to Android, you need to have this extra library called YKDroid that essentially handles YubiKeys challenge response mode, which is what I explained earlier about how the decryption key gets created for the database. As for iOS, I personally have iOS, so I haven't used this, but the recommended application is Strongbox, which is also supposed to be completely compliant with the KeePass standard. I would also like to make to mention the MicroG project, which is something I really like. Now, I currently use a Huawei P40 phone, so that's Huawei's first phone which comes without any Google Apps or Google services. And essentially, I realized that pretty much every app, no matter how related they are to anything Google, they still require Google services for pretty much everything. Like, pretty much every app that requires location is written to only support Google's proprietary location provider from Google services, which is pretty stupid in my opinion, because you don't need this to determine my location. Obviously, you can have it as a convenience feature, but why would you completely require it? And so MicroG is a system level re-implementation of Google's proprietary services that is supposed to look and it's supposed to look like Google's own proprietary services in front of other applications, so that they're supposed to, so that they can actually run without having any proprietary Google services. So I haven't tested out myself because my phone is bootloader locked, so I can't root it. I can't install MicroG. But lots of people have tried it, and it seems to work for the majority of cases, so that's pretty promising. So far, I've essentially also mostly focused about the generic things like email, context, tasks, but our digital life comprises of many other things. Of course, we have documents, we have photo albums, we have personal projects, and we have lots of different resources which are either scattered on some random files, some random computers, or as scattered on some random online platform somewhere else there. And I would really like to find an easy centralized way where I can organize every piece of information that is of value to me, so that I don't have to remember that, yeah, I have this Trello board that is related to this hackathon project, and the actual hackathon project is on GitHub, and the actual hackathon project submission, the execute the compile the compiled binary, for example, is in this random folder and on my laptop. I would really like to find an easy to use centralized way where I can keep track of all these resources, and they can actually be grouped together the way they're supposed to be grouped together. And so I've been exploring different cloud storage solutions to do this. And so first, I will present the best cloud storage solution that I have found myself in terms of software and adapters and clients. And then I'll tell you how did I actually found a way to arrange all of my digital data in a consistent folder structure such that it is extensible and it also supports pretty much every piece of information that is of value to me. So this actually took most of my time to research for the past years is finding an adequate desktop cloud syncing client. There are too many of them, and many of them claim to work, and many of them actually work to some degree, but most of them don't really work well when your drive is, for example, some terabytes in size, and which is what happens if you're trying to upload every piece of information that is of value to you somewhere else, is that obviously it cannot be downloaded or synchronized directly to your computer because it's going to be too large. And so when I was looking for a desktop syncing client, which allows me to mount my cloud drive such that I can still instantly and easily access any particular file I want to, and support and a syncing client that of course supports end-to-end encryption, such that of course the particular cloud provider that I'm using shouldn't really be able to access anything about my data. And lastly, it should support cache. So the most frequently used files or folders or anything else could easily be stored as a cache on my computer that is of course adequately and frequently refreshed, but is still cached such that I don't have to send requests to the cloud drive every time I'm trying to open the folder I've opened 15 times today already. And the client which I found to get most of this way through is rClone. rClone is a pretty big project in terms of cloud synchronization. It is very modular and very extensive. What I mean by that is that it has adapters for pretty much any cloud storage that you may have heard of. Of course, Google Drive, OneDrive, and all the other cloud storage providers. But it also supports end-to-end encryption. It also supports caching, and it's completely cross-platform. So far, so good. The biggest problem I've been having with rClone is currently its implementation of caching is not particularly good, and they are trying to re-implement it via VFS caching right now, because it used to be written in a different way before. And right now the there isn't there really isn't a caching solution that works reliably well, such that I can simply recommend it and say, this is what gets the job done and forget it about. So right now sometimes you may incur some data loss with caching, and sometimes it may not cache the things you want it to cache. So if you are curious about the project and you want to contribute, I think this is a pretty important area you can contribute to. As for Android, I said that this is completely cross-platform, so RCX is a wrapper for rClone. So it simply uses the rClone binary plus adapters to native Android APIs such that you can access your cloud storage on the Android. It works pretty well. If I have to be really picky about this, it's currently not implemented. It currently hasn't fully implemented all the Android storage APIs, so it's not that convenient to use yet. But it's pretty convenient, and it simply gets the job done. That's pretty good. So far, I've said about how to actually set up cloud storage, but there's a bigger question than that. And in particular, how do you actually manage all of your information in one central location? And I have experimented with many different things, but one thing I realized is that there's simply one core property that I want my storage system to have, and that is I have resources like files, like you can call them files, resources, whatever. But for any resource that may be of value to me, such as a photo, document, or something else, for anything that I may want to store in my storage system, it has to have a predetermined place. And that place should be really easy to figure out, such that even if I don't know if I store this resource, I can very simply check this location. If it's not there, it shouldn't be anywhere else. So as long as this property holds, then your storage system can be arbitrarily large, and it will be completely fine because you'll always be able to find the thing you're looking for. And that's a pretty cool property that I have been trying to somehow get by finding the perfect folder structure that can that can arrange everything. But it should, I mean, I guess it's kind of obvious, but I don't think there's a single folder structure that simply gets the job done for absolutely any piece of information in the world. But a pretty good, more abstract solution that I found is the following. So forget everything about folders or file systems or how this actually works. Let's talk about a lot more abstractly. So we have different resources. For example, I have this hackathon project, I have this medical record, for example. And I would like to be able to store these somewhere and to easily access them whenever I need them. And so I set up a system of tags. So a tags are particular labels that a set of labels that I put on any particular resource. These labels are without any particular order, but simply say that this resource relates to this label. And I need to have a very consistent system on what labels I have, and therefore which resources need to be labeled with this particular label. So I could have label events, for example, and any resource that is related to events should be labeled with events, such as a hackathon submission, for example. I could also have the label this particular hackathon name, for example, Hack Zurich is the last hackathon that I went to. And so I could also put the tag Hack Zurich on this resource as well. And I can also put the tag project on this resource as well because it is a project. And so once I define all the tags that I want to place, I simply arrange all I simply tag all my resources. And why I'm trying to do this is because it actually helps me a lot with searching for resources. Because once you know the tags I have, I can simply filter by them and say, okay, if I want all the projects I have, I can simply filter by tag projects. And it's gonna give me my hackathon submission, it's gonna give me all the other side projects which are not hackathon submissions, for example. Whereas if I'm looking for events, it's gonna give me all the hackathon submissions or all the hackathon photos or everything else that I have tagged under events. And that's pretty convenient. But of course, we're living in a world where folders are the default way to organize stuff, and having a folder structure is a lot more restrictive than having tags and resources, which is a lot more abstract and a lot more fluid way to organize information. But I still had to make a folder structure because pretty much every software is written to work with a folder structure. And so I came up with this solution that still keeps the idea of having tags, but also works in a folder structure. And it's kind of semi efficient. Like, it's not that efficient compared to the more abstract idea that I just shared, but it still gets the job done. So how it works is that I still have folders, and every folder is related to every particular tag. So I can have the top level folder events for the tag events. And then within that, I can have the particular hackathon. Within that, I can have, for example, my hackathon submission or my particular document. And how this is actually arranged is I have a particular order of tags, let's say precedence of tags. So if some piece of resource has a tag events, for example, which is the highest precedence tag in this example, then it must be placed in that folder. No matter what other tags it has, it must be placed in that folder, and then it must be placed in other folders recursively based on the other tags as well. Of course, first always taking the highest priority tag. And so what happens is that if events is higher priority than documents, then obviously if I have a document related to an event, it's going to be placed within events documents. And if I have a document which is not related to an event, then it's simply going to be placed in documents. So this folder structure still works because as long as I know my tags and as long as I know the order of my tags, I can still easily find what I'm looking for. So if I'm looking for a hackathon document, then I know it must be in events, it must be it must be in also documents as well within events. But if I simply open documents, of course, I won't be able to filter for all the documents in my folder structure because they are simply scattered around everywhere because I don't have a single folder that contains all the documents, for example, unlike what I would have been able to in my last example. So in this case, it kind of becomes a bit more fragmented and it's more difficult to search for resources. but it still works. And I think it would be interesting to create an open source project here. Maybe it could be a file system, or maybe it could be a file explorer that would also allow me to filter for documents, and it would actually show all the document folders around. And if you know any open source projects that could get the job done, just tell me during the Q&A. What about online resources though? Because so far, what I said mostly applies to local files, and that's easier to organize because we already have them. But like I said, we have arbitrarily GitHub repos, we have these Trello boards or whatever other online accounts or resources you may have. And I would still like to place links to these resources within my folder structure because, again, this is my central location for information that is of value to me. So every information that is of value to me should be there. And so I couldn't find a standard compliant URL file type, like a file that you can make, and when you open it, it opens the browser with that particular URL. But there's an interesting trick I found, which is if you use this HTML file template, and you can use the meta tag to redirect to a particular URL, and once you save this text as an HTML file and you place it in your folder structure, once you open this HTML file, it's going to open that URL. So that way, it's a workaround, but it still works. You can link to your online resources, and it's fine. So that was essentially my talk so far. I'm very thankful that you stayed till the end of ArtConf. Here are my contact details. I would really love if you, I mean, I'll be very happy if you manage to get some bit of value from my research or from my side hobby so far. And have a great day.
Awesome. Thank you for a fantastic talk, Spesden. I'm secret and I'll be asking the questions. There's quite a few today, actually. So I'll just crack on. There's quite a few to get through. Peter Strudel asks, I've never heard of Mailbox, but no mention of Proton Mail or Tutanota. They also support PGP.
I mentioned ProtonMail later in the talk. Tutanota is fairly similar in terms of that they also have a pretty major privacy focus, but they're based in Germany, which is, of course, in the 14 eyes, so that's a downside for some people, whereas ProtonMail is, of course, Swiss. Thing about ProtonMail and Tutanota is that they are very privacy heavy, and so they're trying to rebuild most of the email slash calendar slash contact task infrastructure on them. And of course, when this whole process finishes, maybe they will be convenient enough to use for general public. But right now, for example, I think either it's right now or up until very recently, you still can't do full text search within the content of your ProtonMail emails. Whereas generally, lots of features aren't implemented yet, and it's simply not as convenient. But of course, if you value the privacy, go for it.
Awesome. Steamrag asks, it's a question along the very similar vein. Steamrag asks, did you look into the differences between mailbox.org and ProtonMail?
Well, first, ProtonMail is a little bit more expensive. The country data location, of course. But still, ProtonMail tries to re-implement everything. And for example, their context app and their calendar app, you can't really synchronize this with your local calendar front end on Android. So you just have to use their app, which, of course, for example, still up until very recently, for example, didn't support recurring events. Or they're simply re-implementing all of the features that we have gotten accustomed to.
Right, I see. Another question from Steamrack. Why do you prefer to use mailbox.org for email hosting instead of running your own server?
So the thing about running your own server is that if you don't do it well enough, you may easily get into everybody's spam boxes, which is why I simply wouldn't recommend it for convenience sake. But of course, for more privacy, and if you're willing to run the risk of sending a very critical email, which may get thrown away at any point in time, you could definitely host it yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Ramzi asks, have you tried GitLab for projects and Trello-like boards?
I haven't used GitLab for Trello-like boards per se, but I'm not sure how, like, do they provide any encryption overall, or do they provide anything else that may be of value to our privacy topic right now?
But I mean, with GitLab, you can self-host. So I don't know if the free self-hosted version gives you project boards, but I think that would be the intent of that question, is to self-host it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not writing myself. I just use GitLab from Git.
Right. A. Bowman asks, have you ever considered a plain old folder with rsync or unison?
Of course. I expected to get some more questions of this type. You know, have you just tried to do the most basic primitive thing instead of the more complicated thing?
Right.
The thing is, if for example, organizing your calendar in a text file works for you, then go ahead. But the problem with, for example, rsync is that it's simply not, it's a technology whose purpose is not to do that. If for example, its purpose is to synchronize one state on one machine to another state on another machine. But if I had this huge cloud drive that's like 10 terabytes and I have my mobile phone that I would like to access everything within that drive easily and in an encrypted way, and it still gets to cache my most frequently used files, then rsync simply won't get the job done. And yeah, I mean, it could work, but it's simply not, I don't think that's the right tool for the job.
Right. I mean, you could argue like rsync could be used as a transport layer for some larger application, maybe.
I mean, rclone was inspired by rsync essentially. That's why it's in the name, but it's completely independent in terms of technology.
Right. Infraprado, I hope I pronounced that right, asks, have you looked into TMSU? It enables you to tag files. I'm not sure of the context of that question.
It's from the last slides where we were talking about folder structure and stuff like that. I actually don't know about TMSU. So thank you for that. I'll look into it. Could be interesting.
Cool. And next up, we have a question by Kieto. Oh, sorry, by Rot6. Why not hosting Nextcloud on a VPS? That's pretty simple now with these Docker things.
Yeah, and actually, that's a pretty good solution, honestly. The only reason why I did not recommend it is because, again, you have to self-host things, which in this case it's not an email server, so you don't really run the risk of ruining your work essentially. But you still have to rent a server somewhere else, and obviously, if you're renting a VPS on some arbitrary location, then you have to trust them that they are not accessing your data, and etc. It's simply not that simple to set up, but. Of course, if you have your own NAS somewhere at home and you would like to use it, then certainly that's a good solution. But then again, what if your power dies out and then you're somewhere in the Philippines and that's over? Yeah. So that's why I would personally simply get some reliable cloud hosting from a big company and just encrypt everything.
Yeah, and the next question from Kieto is basically the same: is have you thought about or tried a self-hosted Nextcloud instance? I guess. There's an argument to be made, I guess, by like self-hosting Nextcloud for other people, right? Like your family or your less technologically inclined friends or whatever, like providing them a service using the technological ability that you have is kind of an approach you could take.
That would certainly be a lot easier for them because they, otherwise they don't have to them themselves set up the more complicated technologies such as EtherSync or the other tech, which I recommended in this bed. And they could simply install the front end and connect to the Nextcloud server. So
yeah,
that's a decent solution, but of course it has a drawbacks.
Amin Vakil asks, what protocols does rclone use?
So I'm not sure what you exactly mean by protocol. So rclone is a client application that simply has many different adapters to the native APIs for the different cloud providers. So it's simply creates a common interface between all these providers, and then it also reuses that common interface for encryption or for other more complicated things like chunking and caching and stuff like that, which is pretty convenient.
Okay, awesome. And Peter Strudel asks, just a comment, you could look at r/data curator on Reddit. I'm not sure what r/data curator is.
Yeah, it's a subreddit for something. I haven't heard of it, but thank you. I'll take a look at it.
And finally, Vakholderbar asks, late comment, joined too late, so maybe it's not what you're looking for, but maybe perkeep.org is what you're looking for. I don't know what perkeep
is. I actually know about Purekeep, and I have tried to look into it, and I tried to set it up, but the thing is, it's still under active development, and it looked like many key features are still missing out. So I may be wrong, and if you know something else, just do tell me. But it did not. I mean, I don't remember the exact reasons I had back in the tank. In the tank, it was like a year ago or something. But I didn't have the impression that it simply was functional enough to get the job done.
Right.
It looked like simply a storage for photos that has version history or something else. But I think I may have completely forgotten.
Right. That was going to be my follow-up question. Is as someone who's never heard of Perkeep, if you could like give it a 5-second summary. But I guess you already did that. These next two questions or comments, I guess, don't have an asker subscribe to them. For Proton Mail, they have a Linux bridge and you can use it with Thunderbird IIRC. Also, Nextcloud has boards too.
Yeah, the Proton Mail bridge is actually quite useful, and I think that it essentially solves a big part of the problems that the native normal Proton Mail client has in terms of missing features. I haven't tested it myself personally to know exactly to what extent it actually functions as a native SMTP/IMAP server, because the Proton Mail bridge is something that simply is self-hosts such a mail server on your computer, such a mail client on your computer, such that you can actually access it from the boat or whatever. I didn't really know that. I mean, I didn't particularly know that Nextcloud had boards, but it looked like, yeah, it had lots of features, so it may have boards too, in which case maybe it would be a good idea to use it. So, yeah.
All right. And oh, nice. We've got a follow-up question, which I really like, from Peter Strudel. Is it possible to DIY YubiKey? Is YubiKey a standard physical token, or can someone do their own?
That's a great question. The thing that I don't like about most recent YubiKeys is that their firmware is actually proprietary to their crypto libraries that became proprietary quite recently. And of course, that may open the door to some problems. But whether it is actually completely standard compliant, whether like somebody else can completely create a YubiKey, I'm not really sure what protocol they use to communicate with the computer, but they support pretty basic features like they support time-based, so one-time password generation. They support, they implement the standard for a PGP smart card. So I guess that's something that you can easily re-implement something else. And they also, like, the thing that, actually, YubiKey also, like, the default function of a YubiKey that simply creates one-time passwords. That's it's not time-based, but it's a password that has that your client application, once it's received that password, it has to verify it against YubiKey servers to see if that's actually valid or not. I think that is also defined as a protocol. So you could create your own YubiKey server that may work with this kind of encryption and still authenticate. And for example, Mailbox have actually done this. So Mailbox, actually have their own their own instance of a YubiKey authentication server. So you can buy YubiKey from them, and it will be authenticated by them instead of by YubiKey if you don't want to trust them, because they're in America, of course.
Right. Huh. I wasn't aware of YubiKey phoning home to their servers to check for verification. But I mean, yeah, there are, you know, the primary protocols that they use, U2F and FIDO and then also, yeah, the PGP shit and everything like that, they're mostly open. And a couple of people have mentioned SoloKey or NitroKey as alternatives. But you're right. As of I think YubiKey 3 or I think it's 4, they stopped publishing their firmware as free software, which is certainly problematic when you're using a security centric product.
Like, my YubiKey is old enough for it to be open source, but I really wouldn't use any of the recent ones. So if the alternatives that you recommend in SoloKey and NitroKey actually work, then,
yeah,
just use them.
And I think I remember a project at one of the congresses of vaguely to the effect of soldering your own YubiKey was I think the general concept of the talk.
Yeah,
that awesome. And there's one final question if we can answer it real quickly. What's next for your system? What do you think about doing next, or what doesn't currently spark joy? I said not answered on the stream. I'm very confused. I think we're going to wrap up here. Because we got to get to the outro talk. So this was the final talk of ArchCon 2020. Yeah, so thank you for being part of it. And I will hand over to the rest of the guys. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye-bye.